And welcome back to Thursday's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with Bonnie Berman.
It's Food and Dining Thursday. You can't argue with that.
No, it's the official start of the 16th annual Food Network South Beach Food and Wine Festival. 15th, is it? Okay. It's one of the preeminent such events in the nation. It's raised around $8 million for the FIU School of Hospitality and Tourism. It also gives FIU students hands-on experience with industry leaders. With us now, chef, author, syndicated columnist, and our friend, Linda Gassenheimer.
So nice to be with you, Bonnie and Joe. Yeah, no, it's a big foodie weekend. The beach is going to be just packed. And as you mentioned, it's the 15th year. But you know what? Italian food is going to be front and center at several events. And our guest today is going to be there cooking up a storm at a lot of these events. He's Michael Pirollo. He's the chef owner with Janczewski of the very popular Macchialina, a restaurant. It's on Miami Beach. And now they have the new Bozzi, also on Miami Beach. Let's welcome Chef Michael Pirollo.
Hey, guys. Pleasure to be here with you guys today.
Well, thank you. I know you've got a busy time ahead of you. And we'd love to also hear from you, our listeners. Do you have questions or maybe comments about Italian foods or maybe a comment about the South Beach Wine and Food Festival? Give us a call, 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN.
Or radio at WLRN.org.
And, of course, with us is our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. Now, Fred gives the wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes column that you can read, and it was in this week's Miami Herald, or you can read it online. And also, Fred's column is on Saturday in the Miami Herald. Fred, what are we drinking today?
I'm going to give some tips on how to go to the big walk-around tastings at the festival without hurting yourself.
What does that mean?
Yeah, yeah, I'm afraid to ask what that means.
You'll see. Michael, very important.
Okay. Michael Pirollo, I heard you make a little comment about that not hurting yourself business.
No, I think that if you've been to those tents, you understand that it's very easy to hurt yourself. So I'm excited about this tutorial.
Sounds good. Okay, well, first of all, thank you for joining us. I know you have an event tonight, and you must be very, very busy. It's called Italian Bites on the Beach. So tell us about this event. What is it about?
This is an awesome event. So it's hosted by Barilla Pasta, and it's great. I think it's around 30 to 40 chefs. We all have a table on the beach, and we're all presenting small bites. So this is actually my second year in a row doing this event. I even did it in New York this year, so it's one of my favorites for sure.
So what are you making?
We are doing rigatoni alla macchialina. So it's rigatoni tossed with braised baby pigs and tomato sauce. And
then braised we make baby pigs?
Yeah.
Okay.
How much do they weigh?
The baby pigs?
Yeah.
It's not anywhere in the pasta.
I know that, but...
A still, whole pig in the pasta?
Yeah, the image of baby pigs...
No, yeah. It's very it's nice.
I should have said suckling pig. That's
yeah, that's better. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's too bad we can't edit that out. But so suckling pigs, and then we shred the meat and toss it back with the tomatoes, the rigatoni, and then we put baby meatballs on top as well.
Oh wow, sounds delicious. You know, I think that a lot of us here don't realize. I know in Italy, suckling pig is just a wonderful addition to so many dishes. Dishes there in Italy, so it's a very Italian dish. So now, let me ask you, I ask a lot of the chefs, because how many people are you cooking for?
This is 2,000 people. Mm.
So you're making enough
and
food.
He's doing a radio interview.
Well, yeah, and he's here, 2,000 people. Where do you do all this? How do you get the food from wherever you're doing it to the beach?
They've got it so streamlined now, it's amazing. You go to the convention center, you drop it off, they put it in refrigerated trucks, and then today I'll show up on the beach, and it'll be at my booth in a refrigerated compartment.
And then you have to cook there on the beach?
That's the hard part.
So what do you cook on?
So they have stovetops with generators, and I mean, it's amazing. What they're able to do, it's amazing. They have grills, fryers, wood-burning ovens, whatever you want, you just request it, and you show up the day of, and it's there for you.
Wow.
It's impressive. behind-the-scenes things is actually more impressive than the cooking sometimes. Just the amount of organization it takes to put this whole festival together.
So the porcine cooking will be outdoors?
Yeah. Yeah, it's all outdoors under the tent, right in front of the Ritz-Carlton on the beach.
Huh. Right. And so, and I think we need to say here that the FIU students are terrific. They help so much.
Oh, absolutely. They're amazing. They're amazing.
Right. Well, so now let's talk a little bit about Italy and the fact that you grew up there. So, of course, anyone who loves Italian cuisine, I mean, Italy's the place as far as I'm concerned.
For sure.
So how did you become, I know you're passionate about cooking, but how did you want to make it into a professional career for yourself?
I was always hanging around the kitchen growing up. And, you know, my mom is a great cook. My grandmother taught her everything. So I was always hanging around the kitchen. And eating was always such a big part of our family as well. Like, it wasn't, oh, I'm eating out today. It was 6 o'clock, you're home, the whole family. And we had a big family. And then after high school, it was either go to college or I found this course in Piemonte called ICIF, which is an International Culinary Institute for Foreigners. And it was a course more than a culinary school. So it was a 2-month program, and then they placed you on a 4-month externship in a Michelin rated restaurant.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so
that
was
amazing. Yeah,
it was amazing. So I got to spend 4 months in this amazing restaurant. I ended up getting along with the chef, and even more so the maitre d', who I actually just visited this year. I hadn't seen him in 15 years, and I went back to the restaurant. Where I guess it all started for me, and
he's still there. That's the wonderful thing about some of the restaurants.
He's still there. The container that the salt is kept in is the same one. Like, nothing has changed. It's exactly the same restaurant it was, which is amazing.
Well, that's really wonderful. And you talk about your whole family, excuse me, sitting around the table and eating. And I think we're kind of missing that today. Everybody lives in different cities and different towns. I know where I grew up, all my cousins, we all live within a mile of each other. So
yeah, it was either at my Uncle Mario's house, my house, or my Uncle John's house. All three families were at somebody's house on Sunday. No exception.
Well, that's wonderful, because I remember I was at in Italy and with this woman who was giving a cooking class, and we were all sitting down, and suddenly the doorbell rings, and a young man's there on his bicycle. It was her grandson. And she said, "What are you doing here?" So he said, "I heard you were making my favorite dish. I'm here." And I just think that was so wonderful. It would be great to have that today. Now, okay, so you made this huge leap from Italian cooking to Asian cooking. Now, with Bozzi, what's that all about?
It seems, I guess from the outside, it seems like a huge leap. But as far as, like, I feel like we're just chefs. Like, I didn't only work in Italian restaurants coming up, so it's just a perception that I'm an Italian chef because I have an Italian restaurant. But, you know, coming up through the years, I've worked in French restaurants, Japanese restaurants, fusion restaurants, obviously Italian restaurants as well, you know. I guess my last name is what's jarring about it, but I have a lot of experience in Asian food as well, and
But what type of Asian food, Asian can mean a lot of things, so what kind
exactly,
of food is it?
Exactly, that's the thing. We're not trying to be traditional at all at Bozzi, so it's my take on those flavors. So it's a lot of those Asian ingredients, be it miso, sake, Shaoxing wine, Szechuan peppers, but it's my take on those flavors. So, and also using a lot of Western techniques.
So give us an idea of the popular dish there at Bozzi.
So the Peking duck that we do there, it's wildly popular. So,
Oh wow, that sounds good. So do you grow special ducks, or do you buy special ducks that are grown special for Peking cooking?
Yeah, so we get these. It's the Peking breed, and we get them at a farm in Pennsylvania.
So it is a special breed.
Yeah, so we get 2 deliveries a week. And it's the most beautiful ducks I've ever seen.
And do you blow up the skin? I mean, because Europe, you see the Chinese restaurants, all the ducks are hanging in the windows because they're drying the skin out.
I love that you know all this, that you give me the opportunity to speak on it. So, yeah, so we actually have an air compressor. So when the ducks come in, we we fill them full of air so the fat separates from the skin, and then we put them back in the refrigerator and hanging. And they hang for, the longer they hang, the better. So we try and hang them for at least 3 days, and then we, that dries out the skin, and then we make the maltose and honey mixture that we glaze it with.
Right.
And then it hangs for another 3 days, so that gets in there and dries on.
What is maltose?
It's like a sugar mixture.
It's not maltose. It's a sugar. Okay. OSE. It's a sugar.
Have you ever had one of the ducks explode on you?
Leave it to Fred.
I mean, you could hurt yourself right there.
I'm glad to say that hasn't happened yet. That hasn't happened
okay,
yet.
Okay, so Mike, I have to tell you, one time when we made this in England, my husband decided he was going to blow up the skin with a bicycle pump.
It works.
It did work.
When we were testing, I used a basketball pump just to see if it would work. The first duck I ever made, it just takes a lot longer than the electric compressor. But it works, absolutely.
All right. Well, on that note, we're going to have to take a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Maki Elena and Bazzi, restaurant owner Michael Pirollo. He's the owner with Jen Chevsky, right?
Yes, Chevsky.
We're going to take a short break here, and we'll be back with more. And we've been talking with Michael Pirollo. He's the chef owner with Jen Chevsky of the very popular Maki Elena and the new Bazzi. They're both on Miami Beach. He's going to be taking part in several events at the South Beach Wine and Food Festival this weekend. In fact, he's going to be in one tonight, and he's spending time with us, so we're delighted he's doing that. If you want more information about that, you can go to Sobe. It's SOBEWFF.com on the internet. Maki Elena is on 820 Alton Road, and Bazzi is located in the Marlin Hotel at 1200 Collins Avenue. I think I have to go over that for that Peking duck. What do you think, Joe?
I would love to do that. I was just wondering how someone gets to sleep the night before they know they have to cook for 2,000 discerning people.
Wait, and he's got an event tomorrow night, a Saturday night and Sunday. So, and probably something else. Who knows how many? I'm going to ask him in a few minutes.
I wouldn't get a wink of sleep.
Okay, it's dinner in minutes time. So tonight's dinner is a peanut coconut crusted scallop with coconut rice. Now, scallops are really, really easy to make, and they only take about 3 minutes. And the secret to cooking them is to sear them only about a minute and a half on each side. Get that pan really hot and take them off the heat. They'll be translucent in the center, but they'll continue to cook off the heat. With this recipe, I serve it on a bed of spinach. So in the same pan, I add some spinach, and I add a little coconut milk to that. By the way, I've coated the scallops in some chopped peanuts and coconut flakes. That's really major 5 minute recipe. So easy. And then for a side dish, you can buy some microwavable brown rice or white rice and add some coconut milk to it. This is a 10 minute meal. I know, Joe, you could do that.
It would probably take me 20.
Okay, fine. It takes Chef 3 minutes, I'm sure. Anyway, that recipe and a photo.
You're definitely not hired as my sous chef, okay? Stick to your day job.
I'd slow you down.
Anyway, now Joe, you can get some sleep. You don't have to worry. Okay, the recipe, complete recipe and a photo. It's at dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred Tasker, what are we drinking?
Well, the festival offers a great opportunity to taste literally dozens of wines and write down the ones you like for entertaining at home for the rest of the year. So it's a real opportunity. And this year, there are actually 4 major walk-around tastings, 1 Saturday and 3 Sunday. You can find them at sobefest.com if you want to look them up. And now, if it's your first time at one of these tastings, let me give you a few pointers for having a good time, or at least, as I said, not hurting yourself at the tastings.
Yeah, well, our chefs want to hear about this.
We'll get there in a minute. First, arrive early. Crowds are sparse at the beginning, and toward the end, it can just be an absolute madhouse. And if the weather is hot, is it going to be hot this year, Linda?
No, it's going to be beautiful, actually. Not too hot. Oh,
that's nice. I've been there when it was 90 degrees, and you really got to dress cool.
Well, everyone's calling from Michigan, so let's not talk about hot.
Yeah, snowing here.
Okay.
The tasting tents don't have any real air conditioning, and also remember that you'll be walking on sand in the tents, so no high heels. And as you go into the tents, locate the porta-johns. They're on the street side of the big tents, and after a few glasses of wine, you'll really be glad you know where they are.
I'm thankful for that information, Fred.
As you walk, here's another thing you might not expect. As you walk through the entry area, you'll be approached by fetching young women carrying trays of various liquor drinks. You flee from them. This is a wine tasting, and a couple of martinis is not a good palate cleanser for a wine tasting. When you get inside, there will be long tables at which wineries are offering samples of their wares, and there are literally hundreds of wines there, so you can't try them all, obviously. So what you need is a tasting plan. Taste maybe 10 bubblies, then 10 whites, 10 reds, 10 desserts.
We knew that he'd have the bubblies first, didn't we?
Absolutely. That's what you always do in a tasting.
Okay.
That's why if you don't get to the other ones, you're still okay.
I just have to take issue with you on one little item, Fred.
What's that?
High heels work. Now, they may not work for you.
In the sand?
I'm gonna have to back Fred on this one. I've seen a couple of women in high heels, and it's not a pretty sight. Take the opportunity to break the sandals out and
or sneakers.
Because it gets dangerous. The guy's an expert. Do not contradict him, please.
No,
but
I
might
know.
Stand there and not be able to move.
I'm just kidding. I've tried to do it. I can tell you firsthand, it doesn't work.
Plus, I really like the image of Fred fleeing from the cocktails.
Well, and the pretty young women. Yeah, I know.
There's no comment there.
When you approach a wine table, you should let them pour you a little dollop and chat with the winemaker for a few seconds, and then step aside. There could be 10 people behind you awaiting their turn, and people who just stand there for 10 minutes become very unpopular. If you are tasting wines at that event, you should sip and spit. Yes, spit. Do not swallow, whatever you do. I know everybody wants to, but if you swallow, your tasting will be over in half an hour, and your liver will be over at the end of the day, and that's where you can really hurt yourself.
And I'd just like to interject here that I've been at this festival. If you're going to spit in the sand, please watch the person who's standing next to you, okay?
Try not to spit across more than one person. Huh?
Exactly.
Well, there are spit buckets at every table. And if you think that's kind of gross and you don't want to be seen doing that, a good tip is you bring a red Solo cup and spit in that very demurely and then empty it into the bucket. It's much nicer that way.
Oh, good.
Finally, please, please take notes. Please don't call me the next day and say you found a wonderful wine, but you can't remember what it was. You don't want to see a grown man cry, do you?
All right. I know, Fred, I always wonder how they have the tasting of those wines, especially when it's very hot. When some of the times it's been hot under the tents, and how do they keep the wine that way?
I don't know if they have coolers or not. I bet they do. They probably have coolers behind their tables that they keep the wines in until it's time to pour them.
Michael, do you know?
I'm pretty sure they have just big ice buckets, and right. They just store everything on ice.
Okay. Well, let's get back to Michael Perrello. You're going to be at several events. I think Saturday night you're going to be at Scarpetta. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm really super excited about this event. So we're doing basically a Scarpetta alumni dinner. So it's Scott Conant, Nina Compton, and myself, and we're all doing one course.
Okay, so it's an alumni dinner because you worked with Scott in New York City at Scarpetta and then here at Scarpetta at the Fountain Blue. Is that correct?
Exactly. And Nina was my sous chef when I came on to Scarpetta in Miami.
Okay.
So then once I left, she replaced me. And now she opened a wonderful restaurant in New Orleans. But she came back to town so we could
together. Are you going to have so much fun there? What are you going to be making?
I'm doing a veal cheek saltimbocca. So it's a take on the classic saltimbocca, but we're doing it with braised veal cheeks instead.
Wow.
So
okay.
We braised the veal cheeks and then stuffed them with fontina, prosciutto, and sage, and then sear them and then have a white wine lemon sauce.
I think you're making us all very, very hungry. you have a dish at Macchiolina, and it's called the polenta board. We only have a few seconds left. Tell us that sounds delicious. What is it?
So it's that's a pretty traditional thing where you would your grandmother would make polenta, and then you'd have a board on a table going the length of the entire dining room table, and she'd just pour polenta all over it with, you know, whether it be meatballs, braised escarole, you know, hanger steaks.
Wow. You're just making us all so hungry.
All over the table.
Mushrooms. So we do a version of that.
No, it's on a board. The polenta's
on a board.
And then all that food's in the polenta, and everyone can just sort of dig in. Is that right?
Exactly. So we just change it up pretty frequently. We do meatballs, a sausage ragu. We have like a mustard fruit on there. We have truffled mushrooms on there. It's constantly alternating and changing whatever's in season.
I'd love to hear more about it. And Fred wants to get a big spoon out, but we're out of time. It's been a really tasty week. Thank you so much, Michael Perrello, for joining us.
Oh, it was my pleasure. My pleasure. I hope to see you at the tasting tent. And no heels. Remember that.
Okay. Yeah. And good luck with all. And there are still tickets left for that, I understand.
No pressure.
So good luck for all of your events at South Beach Festival this weekend. Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
Joe Cooper and Bonnie Berman, great talking with you.
Thank you. Pleasure as always, Linda.
And next week will be our very popular one-hour restaurant review program. So join us with your favorite restaurant treasures. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.